Greetings, fellow traveler. As humanity awakens and evolves, we see change in every aspect of our lives. Let's consciously manifest our desires. I am Candace Craw Goldman, and this is New Earth Journey.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. Today is January 5th, 2016, and this is episode 13 of New Earth Journey. Can you believe that it's 2016 already? I had to write a check today to my horse trimmer, and I did it right. I wrote 2016 on the check. Today, I'm welcoming my friends and very special guests, the vets in our world, and it's a big world for us because we have lots of animals, but my really good friends, Brian and Jessica from Rose Hill Vet Clinic here in Rose Hill, Kansas. And Brian and Jessica both were on the show a few episodes ago. I believe it was episode 10. And if you want to hear their story and sort of their background, you can catch up on that on episode 10. But today we're just going to start talking about stuff, right? And if you all have seen the show picture that I put up today for this show, there's a black and white photograph. And you know that was just an iPhone photo. But it's a photograph taken outside of one of our older barn here on a Tierra Moon farm. And that beautiful mare who is getting her skull x-rayed is my mare, a mare we call Mama Belle. And so we're going to talk about that and just fun stories, a lot of them from the farm, I believe, today. And I want to welcome Dr. Jessica Harrison and Dr. Brian Hoods. Hi, guys.
Hello.
We're excited to be back.
I'm really happy for you to be back as well, too. You're so much fun to talk to just on a regular basis. We just sit around on the tractor or in the barn or whatever. And to do this on the show, I thought would be a lot of fun for other people, too. So we're just going to talk stories today. But before we get going, I want to give our listeners a call-in number, because towards the end of the show, or anytime, actually, if you all want to call in, those who are listening, call in with a question or a story or something to add to what we're talking about, please call 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. So we were going to start to talk about Mama Belle and what happened. So what she did was she fractured her skull. And I have never known a horse to fracture a skull before. They have a pretty thick skull, don't they? I mean, it's not easy to fracture a skull, is it?
It is and it isn't. I mean, you're right. They absolutely are equipped with a skull. I mean, most mammals, I mean, the job of any skull is to protect the all-important organ, the brain. So ideally, it should be a pretty strong vessel. However, you know, horses being, you know, between 900 to sometimes 1,800 pounds can certainly create quite a bit of force when they do things. So right. It's certainly... I wouldn't say it's necessarily skull fractures are common, but they're not uncommon either.
Right. Well, I've been around rodeo and such, and there were times where I thought that what I was seeing would have resulted in a skull fracture mm-hmm. of a horse, but no.
I mean, and you're right. They
hit those walls and some of those things, and I'm like, that surely was a fracture.
Yeah.
And like, no.
No, and they'll be fine. I know, and you're right. I mean, sometimes you have situations where you apply an immense amount of force and you're like, oh, there's no way. And they pop up and are fine. And other times you think it was a minor incident and they may never get up again.
It's so interesting. So the way this story works is I just went out to check on the horses one fine day. And my horse, Mama Belle, it just seemed like her head was like scratched. There was like there was hair that was off of the front part of her, down between, you know, her forehead, between her eyes, down the length of her nose. And I'm looking at this and I'm trying to figure out what was going on. And then I turned to see, because she wasn't far from where the event had happened. And I didn't see what happened, but I know anyway. I mean, I know anyway because of looking at the fence, of looking at the horse, and just know, I just knew the story. I already knew the story that my gelding Rio was running that mare and ran her right into a corner. She, you know, she didn't take the turn and go around the shed. She just ran right into this fence. And the fence that she ran into was a steel pipe fence. And this isn't the, you know, the Tractor Supply variety that bends, you know, like nothing.
Debbins fence.
Yes, yes. It's a local, some local fence dudes out here, these really great guys, the Stebbins boys. They put together these fences, these paddocks, and they use water pipe from the old oil, the old oil, what do you even call them? Not refineries. The drilling rigs, not the ones that hold the oil, but the ones that hold the so they had been running salt water through them, and these are, I mean, I don't know what gauge they are, but
it's 4-inch pipe,
so it's pretty crazy strong.
Oh yeah.
And so when I turned and looked, this is one of those moments, you know, you have these moments in your life. And I turned and looked and I saw with that fence, and it was the gate. So there was a tiny bit of play on the hinge, but not much. When I saw the bend, that pipe was bent in, and then on that pipe was her white hair. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at her and I knew what the story was. And my first thought is, how are you even standing here? Mm-hmm. How are you? What? I mean, what? And of course, it got worse later when the swelling and all that. So I don't know. It couldn't have been all that long after it happened, I guess.
I think you found it pretty quick.
Right. I was just shocked, and I think I probably called you or texted you right away, and then, you know, didn't worry too much about it, but then it started day or two later or something like that. That's okay. We actually have a dog in the room, a couple dogs in the room, and I normally make sure that the dogs are not in the room, but I figured since this was a vet show, it'd be okay, so... So the groaning in the background is a great big yellow lab named Cowboy who is he's the king. Yes, he's the king of the dogs in this house. But anyway, so tell me what your memory was of it, and how the story played out from there, Jessica.
Yeah, so I remember you calling me and telling me what had happened. And we originally kind of went through, you know, is she having any neurologic signs? Is she wobbly? And we basically got through that. No, she was truthfully otherwise acting completely normal. But I said, you know, within 24 hours, you know, probably still be a good idea to check her out. So we came over, looked at her. She had some minor swelling considering the trauma that she probably inflicted. Really no hide missing. She just scraped the hair off. Mm-hmm. So she had a few little bald spots, but that was it. Right in the middle of her forehead, which would be right on the fissure line, of her frontal bone. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, she was fine. Like no neurologic deficits whatsoever. Right. So I was like, you know what? I think we dodged a bullet here. I think she's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But within the next couple of weeks, we developed a draining tract. Mm-hmm. That started, she was still acting fine, no neurologic signs. So anytime we have a history of trauma, and then within, you know, a couple weeks to a month later, we get draining tracts, we usually think of something called a sequestrum. Mm-hmm. So a sequestrum, and ironically, Mamabelle was the second skull fracture that developed a sequestrum that month. And normally protocol is, first of all, I'll explain what a sequestrum is to those of you that don't know. So anytime you break a bone, whether you break your leg, your arm, wherever, as long as you can put those two, you know, the fragments back together and they maintain their blood supply, new bone gets laid down, it gets the fracture gets, you know, reincorporated, and basically we heal and we get like a callus, so a big bony knot. A sequestrum is a piece of bone that gets isolated from all of that blood supply and gets cut off, and it basically dies. Circulating in your bloodstream are occasionally, you know, small pieces of bacteria, plaque, tiny, tiny, tiny fragments, and those then usually will end up in the capillary beds near that sequestrum and basically set up a bacterial infection. So the body is now trying to get rid of all of this, and that's what we call an autologous infection. Obviously, Mama Belle had no external hole down to the sequestrum. The draining tract is basically from the sequestrum oozing out and trying to come out. So the picture that's on there is us taking a picture of Mama Belle's head. We took a few scanning radiographs just to see what it looked like. And then we actually placed a probe to basically into her forehead down through that draining tract, a little metal probe, because metal shows up really well. And that actually showed us the track, the oozing track down to where that piece of bone was. So the next step, since, facial bone surgery is a little bit tricky, especially in a standing animal. My next step was probably to refer Mama Belle if, you know, a simple round of antibiotics didn't clear it up. It seemed to be a pretty small piece. We did actually open it up and look for it. We did remove a few tiny pieces, but it kind of just kept draining. So I will kind of swap to the other horse just temporarily. He actually got kicked, and this was actually down on his mandible, so down on his jaw. And same thing, he developed a draining tract, antibiotics seemed to take care of it, and then it just kept coming back. So we're like, you know, it's probably a sequestrum. We x-rayed him, sure enough, there it was. So normal protocol with sequestrum is, you know, to remove it. And if it's not, you know, easy for us to remove it here in general practice, then we refer it. And lo and behold, I mean, we referred him and we got up there. And I mean, this was just a week after we found the sequestrum from the time when the owner was able to get it up through the referral center. And they took more radiographs and they're like, you know what? Body's basically getting rid of it. We don't have to do anything. There's a lot of important structures next to it. I think probably we'll just leave it alone and it's going to be a couple months, but it's not going to be a cosmetic issue. We'll just resorb it. So again, nothing is 100% in the veterinary and in any medical world. I mean, the animals don't read our books. I mean, we may say, oh, sequestrums have to come out. Absolutely, they have to come out and they need to. And I distinctly remember being like, oh my God, we've got to get Mama Belle's sequestrum out. Or we've got to get this other horse's sequestrum out because, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. And lo and behold, no, neither case went that way. So, you know, I waffled for quite a while with Mama Belle. And, you know, Candace is like, you know, I'm fine. If we don't have to do that, I'm fine with time. I can keep it, you know, clean for that long. Mm-hmm. And she did. Candace kept it absolutely immaculate. And eventually, problem resolved, and Mama Belle still has a beautiful, beautiful head.
She has a lump there, though.
She has a bump, a small bump.
Yeah.
That's that callus from bony remodeling.
She's not as beautiful of a profile as she used to. So tell me, what that's a callus.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about what that is. So that is what?
Yeah, so if you have perfect union between two broken bones, you will actually not get a callus at all. And it is possible. It's difficult to keep it that way because in order to keep it that way, you have to hold pretty still. I mean, this is why we put casts on even after we've put a pin or plating in a fracture in people and animals. So a callus all a callus means is we had instability in the fracture. And it can be, you know, minor. The size of the callus basically corresponds to the amount of instability. So at the microscopic level, you have little cells. So you have cells that build bone and cells that tear down bone. And both of those processes have to go on at the same time to actually heal. You know, they get rid of any old bone and then they're constantly laying down new bone. And it's actually how, you know, like if we just sit around in a bed for 5 months and don't use anything, you know, your bones actually do weaken because gravity or the force of you running around causes tiny little micro fractures all the time. And so your bones are constantly having to remodel and strengthen to support that. So in Mama Belle's case, we didn't have a bunch of instability because, I mean, the head doesn't move and, you know, support weight like, you know, say a femur would. But if we had a femur repair that was fairly unstable, like maybe the repair wasn't as tight as we wanted, or the dog or person ran around too much, you can get some pretty huge calluses. Now, the purpose of that callus is the body is literally just saying, keep pouring more concrete, keep pouring more concrete. And this is basically the concrete part. Keep pouring more concrete until it's stable. And then over the next 2 to 3, 4, 5, I mean, bonus, like I said, constant remodeling. So forever, that fracture site is constantly remodeling. It's always interesting if we get a dog in that has some other problem that has had a fracture, like maybe when it was a puppy, and you get it, we get a glimpse of it, you know, while it's in there for some other radiograph, and it's kind of cool to see. I mean, sometimes it goes back, I mean, when it gets that long, it can go back to almost looking normal. No callus at all. And it could have had a callus the size of a, you know, softball.
So it's not bone. It's something other than bone that kind of goes away then after a while.
No, it's just bone. It's still bone.
But so the callus that you're talking about is bone.
It's bone. Mm-hmm. Hmm. It's bone. It's just excessive bone until all of the knitting inside that callus gets
okay,
done.
Okay, so wait a second. You're telling me Mama Belle's lump could possibly go away?
Yeah, over time.
Well, how cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm excited about that. Because it may be
a while, but I mean I suspect it probably already had some change.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, you know, one of the reasons we're talking about that, not only because of the photograph, but you know, I knew that I was getting along with these two people. I mean, I loved Jess's dad anyway for many, many years. Who took care of my family's pets when we lived in Kansas when I was younger. But what I really loved about Jess was she was working with me as a partner. You know, she wouldn't just say, you know, you have to do this. And when I would ask some questions about, well, what do most people do and why, and she would go round and round, and she was so open-minded about it. And with Mama Belle's sequestrum, you know, I just kept saying, well, what's the big problem with it? Just draining like this. And I remember your face and you're going, well, I guess there's no problem as long as it doesn't, you know, the infection doesn't. And I'm like, well, then I'm fine to just see if this will work itself out. And it did. And I think we all of us have learned from each other over the last few years, and it's been so much fun. And they've been so cool. They've let me in places that I've got to see stuff. But we were going to talk about one of the other horses. Something else that interesting that happened out here that I know you like to talk about. Mama Belle, we call her Mama Belle because she has a filly that I still have, a mare out here that we call Luna Belle. And Luna Belle had, I went out one day and I saw a hole in her hoof and she was favoring her foot. And so I instantly give Jess a call. And why don't you tell me what you remember from that visit?
Yeah. So, and Luna Belle is, she's an interesting horse. And so we get out here to look at her. And yeah, immediately, I mean, she was, we grade lameness basically from, an oval grade 1 to 5, you know, one being very, very slight, difficult to see even at the walk, at any gait, and 5 being non-weight bearing lame. So I would say she was definitely lame, you know, at the walk. So I would probably, she was probably a grade 3 lame. She had a hole. Almost, maybe just like a half a centimeter below her coronary band, and about the size of a nail hole, truthfully, like a roofing nail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Brian.
So this is right where the hair starts for you people out there who don't know what that is.
Basically, where the hairline goes, transitions to the hoof, and that's actually all the cells that are responsible for growing the hoof. And you know, when those get damaged, it can be kind of scary. And she was right below that and pretty sore. So, you know, obviously there was no foreign body in it, but there was clearly something at some point. But the weird thing is when horses get nails on their feet, it's usually on their sole, like on the bottom, because they step on it and it goes up in their sole, which creates, depending on where it goes, it can be pretty severe. And hers was literally like someone had taken a nail, like, I mean, parallel to the ground, perpendicular to her foot, and just driven it in right there with that hole.
I know. I remember thinking how...
Like, I have no idea how she did that. I don't know if she was getting up and
I tried to imagine how she could have even have done that. And do you know what... Do you remember that it was days later I actually found
yes.
a big nail
Bent.
In
yeah.
the paddock? And I'm like, but I couldn't believe that it was the one that did it.
Yeah,
but there it was.
Exactly.
And we still, so go ahead with the story.
So, I mean, we treated her basically like we would treat any nail, you know, x-ray to see how deep the track went. And it luckily didn't go as deep as we thought it might have. But it still could have caused, you know, it could have caused infection. It could have gotten into her coffin bone. So basically we treated her with, you know, just like we would any street nail, anti-inflammatories. We had Candace soak her foot with Epsom salt, and actually to remarkable improvement mm-hmm. within just a few days. Mm-hmm. And the coolest part with this horse was anytime a horse injures any part of its foot, there are a lot of different things, quarter cracks, anything like that. It usually takes a horse a year to replace its foot. So if you were to draw a line right at the hairline with a permanent marker or make some mark, it normally takes anywhere from 8 to 12 months for that to grow out, to basically make a whole new hoof. Mm-hmm. Kind of like us growing a whole new fingernail. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's basically what horse hooves are. They're very similar to our fingernails. And so here I am telling Candace, oh, well, you know, it's going to be a year before that little spot grows all the way back out. And that spot grew out in about, what was it, 2 months?
Yeah, it was 2 months.
Completely grown out. So this man replaced her foot in 2 months.
And this is where our friendship gets interesting because because Jessica, you know, I'm talking to her about this and she's seeing her hoof and she's like, well, how is this happening? And so then
I wanted to know what product she was putting on it to get it to grow like that.
Right. And I wasn't using any product at all, but I was doing energy medicine mm-hmm. and I was doing Reiki, both hands-on and long distance. And I was also using a method called a cellular and organ regeneration, which is a very interesting method discovered by a couple of Russian dudes who, I don't even know if I've talked to you about this. Have I talked to you about what cellular, the core stuff is? So this, for those of you out there who might be interested in what this is, it's cellular and organ regeneration. And there was a couple of Russian scientists and what they were doing was they were using a computer and they were programming numbers and things into it, trying to come up with information that would come up with like probes and stuff into petri dishes and things like that to see if they could affect, you know, bacteria counts and things. Yeah, and stuff like that with the computer. So they were doing all of this. And what they found was as they were, and this is so amazing, this is how this was found. What they found was when they were just near the petri dish and the computer talking about what they were going to do just with the words, the effect started happening with no computer whatsoever.
Right.
So they set the computer aside and said, can we just do this with consciousness? Can we just do this with vibration? And the answer was, yeah, they had some great effects like that. So I was using some of those things and that's how Luna Bell's hoof recovered, I believe, quickly.
I believe completely. I mean, there's no wonder hoof, you know, supplement, whatever, that makes a horse's hoof grow out in, you know, 3 months instead of 12. So.
And, you know.
And I took pictures. And, I mean, somebody out there could say, oh, you know, you changed the date on the camera. No, I did not change the date on the camera. I was equally as dumbfounded when I went out. Because here I'm telling the client, oh, it's going to be a year before the spot's grown out. And, well, just kidding, it's grown out.
You know, and, you know, with Luna Bell and then with Odin, and then I don't even know if I can talk about Odin tonight. I may have to save that story for later. But with Luna Bell and that story, you know, when I think about that, and I think about Odin and some other things, I think in some ways, I think that happened, the strangeness of it all and the remarkable timing of it all happened so that we had some more things to talk about and explore together.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
So, cause you know, if it would have been a nice 6 months, whether it would have been, normally at 12 months, you might've gone, wow, that was really fast. But for, for a two-month.
Yeah.
For a two-month thing. And, you know, when Jess was talking about where that nail goes, it goes, because the first thing I thought was nail, hole, that's right into the coffin bone if it right. went straight in like that. And the reason they call it a coffin bone
yeah.
is what you might think.
Yep, exactly.
If that bone gets mucked up in a horse,
that's where they go.
It's problem.
Yeah, big problem.
It's problem. So, hey, what do you have to say about horses over there, Dr. Rhodes?
Not a whole lot about horses.
Yes, you do. And you ride. And you know, when I was looking at pictures to put up for the show, the one that you have where you're in the line and
oh, on my Justice, Facebook page.
Yeah,
yes.
Justice is bucking and you're in front.
Yeah.
it was the wrong shape. It was just the wrong shape for this, but I got to get us a picture of maybe all three of us on horses around here. But so Brian goes out and he takes care of a little different class of animals. Jess hangs out with the horses pretty much, and both of them do the small animals, the dogs and the cats and all of that at the clinic. But you've got quite the variety of livestock that you take care of, right, Brian? I mean, when you walked in today, I asked you what you were doing. What did you say?
We did two C-sections on pigs in the last 48 hours, which we haven't done C-sections on pigs in 4 years. And just who knows why certain things happen.
So, okay, so I only know C-sections from a human point of view. So what was the problem? I mean,
the piglets were too big to come out, and the sow was just too worn out to have them on her own. And these piglets were pretty valuable, so the owners elected to have a C-section done and get those piglets out. We saved three of them, so, I mean, hopefully that can go from there with those.
How many of them were there?
There was 10 or 13 total.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. So the others expired before
yeah.
you? Oh, my. Oh, poor pig.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was one. What happened to the other one?
Other one had a hip issue and couldn't get up and couldn't have, again, the piglets were too big. So we had to do a C-section on her. And we got, I think, three live ones, and there might have been five or six total.
Okay, so what's going on with this too big of piglets things? I'm starting to, you know, I have questions about this. Are we talking about some high growth food?
No, they used the wrong size. They used the wrong boar, probably.
Oh, too big of a guy.
Yeah,
same reason we would have a problem with cattle.
Yeah,
usually the reason we're doing a C-section in food animal is, you know, either the fetus is present. Usually they're just too big to
come out
the back door, so they have to go outside door.
Right. Wow. And some of the other fun animals that you take care of around here are?
Goats, alpacas, sheep, cattle, elk.
You take care of some elk?
Yep.
We talked about bobcats last time.
Yeah, we've done bobcats.
But elk?
Yeah.
Who's got elk?
There's,
no, you don't need to use names. I mean, but there's people around here.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that raise them. For me and for pets, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so hold on here. Where the heck do you get a baby elk? Seriously.
You can buy them at livestock auctions. Mm-hmm. Missouri, you can get a lot of exotic animals.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So interesting. When we lived in Texas,
Texas, you can get a lot of.
Yeah, that I know. When we lived in Austin, the fellow who lived in the land right next to us, he did the thing though that made me crazy. He raised those antelopes, and he raised those antelopes and those other horned animals that would but you know, in a fish barrel kind of stuff. So these antelopes would be, and these other animals would be so used to people,
mm-hmm.
and he raised them to go then be put on these places
right.
for people to hunt, and they just walk up to people. I mean,
yeah.
it's like, really?
Yeah, it kind of takes the...
Yeah.
takes a little bit of the glory out of it.
Right. So I know that those animals are available like that, but mm-hmm. I guess I didn't know about elk, and so are these the big guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
And what's an elk like to work with? I mean, are they like...
They're aggressive. They're really aggressive. And, and these,
very athletic.
During the rut, this client wanted the antlers cut off so they didn't hurt each other.
And the rut is?
When they're fighting to mate. So we had to sedate them, take their antlers off, and it did well. I mean, they didn't harm each other. It was a good deal for them.
Wow, we took away their weapons.
But they don't need to protect them. They weren't protecting themselves. I mean, they were in in an enclosure that they didn't have any predators. Right. There was no reason to need them.
Right.
It
doesn't hurt them. It's not like declawing a cat.
No. So when a deer, or I mean, you can tell them when a deer or an elk grows their antlers.
Yeah.
So like cattle have horns.
Right.
So those have a blood supply throughout their entire life. If you cut off a cow's horns, it's going to bleed a lot and it's going to be very painful.
Yeah.
If you were to cut off a deer's antlers when they're in velvet, so when they have all the fuzz on them, they're actively growing. That's part of that fuzz kind of signifies that. That fuzz is on there for the blood supply. And if you watch them when the rut starts, and that's why so deer rub their antlers to scent things, and also they're rubbing them to get rid of all that velvet once the antler reaches its peak growth, that velvet actually dies, and that's why you'll see some of it kind of stringy every once in a while when they're first starting to get rid of it. Once that velvet's gone, those horns can come off. I mean, you see them shed. Like, that's why people go and find sheds in the woods. And so we didn't take them off while they were in velvet. Like, we took them off when they were basically close to getting ready to come off. We just speeded up the process so that nobody got gored by the other one. So, because they were valuable animals for him.
Interesting. Yeah, so we're moving into, I guess, what? We're officially in... two or three weeks of winter already, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So actually, you know, I've been thinking about this and head back to horses, but the big animals anyway, you know, the animals that that we have as companion animals around here, a lot of people put blankets on their horses, and I know there's like great debate about this, and I thought we might talk about that a little bit. When I did some fox hunting back in Pennsylvania, what we would do is we would body clip not all of the
trace
horse. It's exactly right. So we would leave their hair on their legs and in a lot of places, but the places where they would get hot and where the saddle went and everything, we would trim them so that they wouldn't be so hot. So they wouldn't be running like in a winter coat all day long. So then you had to put a blanket on them for them to, you know, be comfortable and healthy and live in a Pennsylvania winter. For horses that didn't get trace clipped or clipped, you know, people sometimes still put on blankets, and around here people put on blankets. And my first year here, maybe even my second year here, I was still doing that. I was still putting blankets on the horses. And then I kind of didn't, because I found particularly my big gelding, when I put a coat on him, he wouldn't grow any kind of winter hair at all. His hair stayed very thin, and he would yank his blanket off and he would tear it. And if it was raining in the middle of the day and it got cold, and I knew that you can't have a wet blanket on a horse, it was so much work. And it was also a concern because of getting caught up and stuff. But I just said, you know, and I did a little research, and so I've made the decision not to put blankets on my horses, thinking that their coats have a better chance of getting, thicker and doing what they're supposed to do over the winter. But you tell me your thoughts, because I just know you have some.
I do. I do have thoughts on that. And it really is, there is no right or wrong answer to blanketing. It is completely situation specific. So, and you're right. So, folks that are competing, especially folks that compete throughout the winter and maybe live in a climate that is like ours, you know, a lot of people will keep them, you know, in a barn. If they've got a heated barn. I mean, there are people that can, especially if you put them under lights, you can keep them with a summer hair coat year round, even in climates like Alaska. And that is a little bit easier for them. Hopefully they have a heated indoor arena to work them in as well. Because when you work a horse hard, especially through the winter, their hair coats are made to keep them warm. If a horse is left to its own devices, and let me specify this by saying this is a happy, healthy horse in good weight with a good hair coat. If left to their own devices outside, ideally they should have food, water, and shelter. They really don't need a blanket. like, for instance, your horses in your situation are fine. They have shelter from the wind and the rain. And the biggest thing that they need is access to hay. Their hind gut is basically like their furnace, very much like a cow's rumen is their furnace. If they can keep it, and hay is basically their wood. Mm-hmm. So if they can keep that furnace stoked, it is amazing how much heat they crank out by basically breaking down that fibrous material. Grain, not so much. Obviously grain will help keep them in, you know, good body condition, but, as long as they've got a good hair coat and they're in good body condition and, you know, ideally shelter so they can get out of the wind and the rain, they really do fine and don't need a blanket. Blanketing to me is, you know, specifically for maybe an older horse that isn't in as good or any horse that's not in good body condition, because they're not going to, even if they've got a thick woolly coat, they're not going to be able to stay warm. If you're trying to put weight back on a horse and it's winter, put a blanket on them, because they're not going to burn near as many calories trying to stay warm. Instead, they can then put some of those calories towards putting on more weight.
Whoa, I'm going to interrupt you there right now then, because I'd like to see Rio put a little more weight on. I have a big paint gelding, and he's a little thin on my scale. I don't know, maybe out there, maybe on a regular person scale, he might be just fine. I mean, I don't see his ribs or anything, but he's just, compared to the other horses, he's kind of thin. My fear is, oh, I really can't put a blanket on him today because of, and then fill in the blanks.
Right.
I mean, once you start putting a blanket on, you got to do it.
You have to be diligent. That's the problem. And one thing that we do see happen is, you know, say it's 20 degrees when you get up in the morning, and you're used to blanketing your horse, so you put the blanket on him. And it's Kansas, and say it gets to 65 degrees that afternoon.
Right.
That horse is going to be, I mean,
miserable.
They can kind of get into trouble sometimes. I mean,
right.
A horse with a winter blanket on that's rated to minus 20 when it's 65 degrees out in a hair coat, I mean, that's not good. That's not good for him.
Mm-hmm.
So we usually say blanket, if you're going to blanket and you can't come home in that afternoon, basically blanket to what the high of the day is going to be. So and that's why a lot of people will just elect not to blanket. Again, back to if we're competing on them, and you basically get them hot to the point they're sweaty, you can't just kick them back out, because it's not like they got wet from the outside in, because their coat will actually repel a fair amount of water. They're sweating from the inside out, and that takes a long time to dry, and they will get hypothermic if you kick a really sweaty horse back outside. So it takes us hours to dry them off. So then enter body clipping. Clip all their insulating hair off.
Right.
You got to blanket them again. So blanketing is a lot of work. I mean, it's great if you're competing on them all the time and maybe you want them to have a shorter hair coat or you want to body clip them. They don't need it, though. So if you're just doing light work or no work over the winter, most horses are fine without a blanket.
So
they did a research study over in England where they taught the horses basically they offered them a blanket, and they taught them that if they nosed a certain, they had two little buttons, basically. If they nosed one,
they got to choose.
They got to put the blanket on. If they nosed the other one, they wanted the blanket. They didn't want the blanket, or they wanted it off. Most horses, I know this, and this.
How cool is
and it's really,
that?
It's a pretty simple mechanism. I mean, basically.
Lunabelle would have gotten that one.
Yeah,
right.
And I mean, most horses they taught, it was, and it, to me, it was pretty self-explanatory. Because if you spend any time watching horse behavior at all, you know, horses can go out when it's 30 degrees out, and if they're, or minus 20 out, and if there is no breeze, the sun's out, even if there's snow on the ground, they're not in the shelter. They're out running. They're playing. I mean, they look like they're having fun. I mean, they truly enjoy it. Their happy temperature this time of year is probably about 40 degrees. I mean, humans, our happy temperature is like 75.
Mm-hmm.
That's miserable to them with a hair coat like that. That's why in the mornings when it's 20, 30 degrees, it's kind of like, you know, us getting up. I mean, Some of us don't like the cold at all. But, you know, like kids, you know, it gets cold out and they're all running around. And that's kind of what horses do. So, but anyways, these horses were very distinct. There were only two situations that they actually wanted to wear the blanket. And that was either pretty brutal wind when it was cold. I mean, obviously they don't want a blanket when it's 100 degrees out and it's windy. Or, you know, rain. Precipitation definitely makes things a lot harder. Rain, and especially rain combined with wind. Certainly is hard on them. I mean, we found that out up in North Dakota a couple years ago with large amounts of cattle herds. It rained steadily. It was 40 degrees in rain for almost a week, and then all of a sudden it froze and started snowing on them. And even cattle in really good condition, I mean, thousands died. They froze to death. So,
yeah.
I mean, once it gets wet and cold for that long.
Right. So, and when blankets get wet, that's a problem too, right?
It is. Yeah, you are much better off not blanketing a horse than keeping a wet blanket on him, because that's literally, I mean, they can't, it's like us running around outside in the weather with wet jeans.
So does it make you crazy like it makes me just driving in the town around here sometimes seeing the horses that that have got the wet blankets on or have got the blankets on when it's 60 degrees and stuff. And it just, and I just saw it. I think, you know, I know people try
well, they
to
blanket. They blanket with good intentions and, you know, it's life happens and you don't get back up to either put it on or take it off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah. And actually another wet blanket problem is a fungal disease. I mean, you can certainly get rain rot underneath that blanket right. pretty easily. And yeah, probably the worst case scenario with blankets is, the blanket goes on in November and it doesn't come off until March, and you take that blanket off and you have a rack of bones under it because right. you're not looking at the horse every day. Right. So, I mean, if you, you know, if you're the person that maybe just feeds once a day and you really don't ride him over the winter, you're just throwing hay, probably a better idea to just not blanket him, especially if you've got a shelter and they've got access to good quality hay all the time mm-hmm. and they're in good body condition, they should be fine.
All right. So I'm going to get personal here. I want Rio to gain a little weight. So on the coldest days when it's windy, mm-hmm. go throw a blanket on him. Can I do that?
Yeah.
And actually, on those like below 0 days.
Right.
That's not,
yeah.
That's not changing too much, is it?
Or no. Cause he's already got his hair grown in too.
Okay.
So you're not going to like halt the hair. I mean, there's a reason that horse show people start putting sheets on in September.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Cause you want to halt the hair growth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like we actually have like, there's like a set schedule. Like, I mean, this temperature to this temperature sheet.
Yeah.
This temperature to this temperature blanket. This one is sheet and blanket. This one's double blanket hood.
Interesting.
There's all kinds of things to go along with it. But and the good thing is they also, there's so many blankets to choose from now. I mean, mm-hmm. you can get a blanket with no fill. You can get it with up to 400 to 500 grams of fill. So the no fill waterproof blankets are some of my favorite for horses that have a hair coat, but just to keep the wind and the water off of them because mm-hmm. they're lightweight. So they're not going to like dampen. They're not going to just mash their good hair coat down because part of that insulation comes from that fluffy hair coat. And when we start blanketing mm-hmm. them, it kind of squishes it down. Mm-hmm. The lightweight ones that are wind and waterproof help though, because it keeps them dry and that's really all they need. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Well, there's that. So, now I have some more questions about, because we were talking about worming the other day. And one of the things we've tried to do here at the Atiramoon Farm is not give medicines of any kind if we don't have to, including, you know, I know that a lot of people, you know, have had problems with horses and worms and colicking on worms. And so people do the every 2 months worming. But I just, you know, I can't help but think of the cycle that's going on there about them pooping it into the, you know, into the land, and then that the chemical going into the whole system, into the water, and then providing resistance mm-hmm. to the other worms. And so we tried diatomaceous earth, and we had, you know, I would say some pretty good success with it. But mm-hmm. a couple of our equines, Luna Bell and the little miniature donkey Elvis here, mm-hmm. Where all the other horses seem to really do well on the diatomaceous earth, those two seem to have worms for a while. And I broke down and started to do the daily wormer on them, which
right.
I just, gosh, that was not easy for me. I mean, it was like, okay, I really didn't want to do it.
Right. I remember.
Yeah. But so what we're doing is, And what we're doing with them, I think, is what we're doing with all of the animals in all situations with you guys, which I love, which is constantly reevaluating
mm-hmm.
and considering.
Exactly. Preventive.
Yeah, and we're considering the new things that are coming out. And that's why I love stopping over at the clinic.
I know.
Like, coming over, just the last time when you got so excited, I'm talking to Brian now, and he and I were talking about probiotics, and I'll ask you about that in a second. But why don't we start with any new thoughts about worming, particularly horses and weather and stuff?
Yeah, so many. And truthfully, intestinal parasites are becoming a problem, and they're going to become a much, much bigger problem. I mean, we've just started scratching the surface with that, and it's our own fault. It is literally all from the owners to the, you know, veterinarians. It's all of our, it's our own fault. And it also crosses definitely over into the other large animals, especially goats and sheep and cattle. And I'll let Brian discuss that. But as far as horses go, we used to recommend this rotational deworming system, which was basically our idea to not have any parasites in the horse at all. Well, we've discovered that that's not possible. Horses eat off the ground. They're going to have some low level of parasitism just because there's no eggs visible on a fecal exam that we run. doesn't mean that there are no parasites in the animal. It is almost impossible to completely rid an animal of parasites. We actually got to go to a really amazing continuing ed speech from a man named Dr. Pugh, and he has got some great, great research out there. So we have shifted. Not only did we discover that by doing rotational dewormers, we were trying to basically prevent, you know, resistance. You know, if we expose parasites to multiple different dewormers, then we'll put off resistance. Well, what we found is we were deworming animals that didn't need to be dewormed, first of all, which is most of the population. Animals that continue to carry high worm burdens in the face of dewormers, it's usually in their own immune system. And our own immune systems are highly
high
responsible.
High worm burdens.
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 Yes.
I thought you said burdens.
No, burdens.
I was like, wait a second, that's a new one.
No, burdens. High parasite count.
Gotcha.
They're you know, loaded up. That's partly their immune system failing to prevent these. And then, you know, we come in with a dewormer. So we have now switched to recommending a fecal exam and basically tailoring the deworming protocol to an individual animal. Now, I'm not saying there aren't animals out there that need to be dewormed, you know, maybe still every 60 days. But for the most part, most animals need it twice a year. Strongyles are resistant to ivermectin. We've already seen it in Kentucky and several other states, and that's not good. So what these parasites do, they're going to continue to evolve. They're going to continue to become resistant. There's a lot of there are a lot of dewormers out there that tout they can, you know, get rid of X, Y, and Z parasites, and quite frankly, they can't do it anymore. There's basically one product now that basically works, and so that's the one that we recommend. But due to, you know, there's none of the research is solid on there, so I'm not going to stick my foot in my mouth and you know, say a bunch until that research is totally out. But I definitely recommend doing a fecal exam on the animal. We find out what's in there and we treat it with the appropriate medication. This every 60-day deworming is going to land us into a very, very bad place.
Yeah. And so, I'm so happy to hear that vets are, because, you know, back in the 80s, in the 90s, you know, years ago when I and some of my more naturally minded horse friends were kind of cringing at all of this wormer use, you know, the traditionally minded, they kind of laughed at us about not wanting to worm the horses. And it was kind of like we saw that some of this coming, mm-hmm. you know? And so you said, and we're coming down, you know, towards the end of the show, but we definitely want to hear it affects some of the other larger animals and the livestock.
One of the number one calls I get on goats or sheep also is, the client will call, the sheep's down, the goat's down, laying down, it can't get up. And 99% of the time it's from parasites, and the owners have gone to a supply store in town and bought a dewormer over the counter that in my opinion should not be there. And they underdose it, they use it wrong, and now they have caused a resistance issue in these animals, and there's not a whole lot I can do because they've gotten advice from ex goat owner and ex supply store, and they for some reason have reserve about asking a veterinarian for some help. And they have now put themselves in situations where there's not a whole lot I can do because they've used every single dewormer under the sun, and every worm that these animals have is resistant to whatever I can give them. So it is a huge issue that has been created, and a big part of it is over-the-counter drugs.
Mm-hmm. And you've had some clients who've had some pretty good luck with the diatomaceous syrup.
I've got clients. I mean, you talk to goat owners and sheep owners, and everyone deworms. They all deworm. Every single one of them deworms. I've got clients that I don't think we've given a single drop of any dewormer to. A lot of them will use diatomaceous earth, and whether it works or not, I don't know. But I do know that these animals don't have parasites or very low burdens that they're able to deal with and not have issues with and live and produce offspring and have no problems.
Well, and on a side note with that too, a big key to any parasite management issue is environment. I mean, if you've got an animal that's living in a, you know, just 15 by 15 area that's literally up to its, you know, knees and poop all the time, they're constantly getting exposed. You know, no immune system is going to be able to overcome that. So really appropriate poop removal, either off the property or to an area that is downhill from all the other animals so it doesn't just run back down into their pens, is key. And proper drainage, you know, wet pens that have water standing them all the time are great parasite breeding grounds. So environmental management is a huge part. And fecal exams, we got to find out what is in there and how many of them in order to appropriately treat them. So, you know, the fact that all these, it is a big pet peeve of ours, not from, you know, and it's not because, you know, we're no longer selling them. That is a moot point. We, you know, we script out dewormers all the time. We don't really even sell much of them in our clinic anymore anyways, but they still should require a prescription, because what's going to happen is people, I mean, I have talked to many people that still do the 60-day deworming, and I'm like, you know, that's going to be a problem. You're going to have because what happens is, and Brian is right, when you get a parasite that is resistant to everything and it's killing the animal, it's going to kill the animal because there is nothing else we can use to treat it. It is resistant to everything. And right now, you know, one of our big guns is moxidectin. They're eventually going to be resistant to that too. So, and there we've already had cases that are resistant to it. And it's unfortunate because, you know, it's killed the animal. And the scary thing is those are in the environment and those are zoonotic, meaning humans can get them. So, and we are not a normal host, so we're not going to get them in our digestive system. They go other places. And, you know, we do not want to see it get to the point where a human has to get a resistant parasite infestation before, you know, we actually start to appropriately treat animals for parasites.
Yeah, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about all of the things that we as humans do with, you know, colds and ear infections and just kind of the overdoing of some of this. It's, you know, it's so funny. It's like, you know, I was watching just a YouTube documentary, I think it was, on water, and they were doing some research about what pharmaceuticals were in water, and people were astonished that these pharmaceuticals were in water. You know, the earth is a closed system. It's, you know, you can think of the earth as an aquarium.
Right.
And if you think you can go dump your garbage or your radiation or whatever, you know, in one corner of the aquarium, and then you go live on the other corner, you are going to be sharing whatever is there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It makes me wonder, you know, are the drug people, what are they saying in schools? Is anybody looking at the really big picture here, or are they constantly just trying to find the next chemical?
I would say they definitely get the big picture. In fact, I will always remember a picture they showed of a pasture that was populated by horses that were dewormed with ivermectin every 60 days. And I mean, if you want good pasture management, that's a terrible idea too, because everywhere those horses pooped, the grass was awful. I mean, so
right.
That ivermectin is in their poop, and it will kill the dung population that is supposed to help break down all of that manure.
Wow.
So, and those guys are really helpful you want those guys in your pasture to help break
right.
that stuff down. I mean, nobody likes a dung beetle in their house, but you know, when they're in their appropriate environment, they're a necessary part of the ecosystem, and you know, overworming certainly results in that too.
Well, I'm trying really hard to be as natural as I can out here in rural Kansas. Sometimes I wonder when I see that who I'm surrounded by, some of the conventional farmers around here. But we're trying, and I know that my crew here is healthy and happy and doing very well with your care. Some of the things that we want to talk about next time, I think, is I still want to talk way more about vaccines, particularly for our cats, mm-hmm. for our cats and dogs. I think we could do a whole show just on vaccines. So so maybe we'll do that next time. And another show that I really want to do talk about is the food, nutrition and food. And because Jess and Brian and I, we talk so much about this all the time, and we've really made a lot of changes in the way that we feed our dogs and cats over the last few years. And it's just, it's so much fun to know that, you know, I've kind of been with you during, mm-hmm. during these changes, and that, and I've seen, you know, the great benefits, in my animals. And
yeah, well, we'll talk about Cowboy and Finn in that one.
Yeah, Cowboy and Finn, the dog that was making a lot of noise earlier that I had to squirt out of the room because he was just loving Brian so much. we had to get him out. And we really are coming down to the end of the show. And I just want to say how much fun it is to have you guys as friends here. I love you so much. And for those of you out there, you know, who might be looking for a vet in Southeast Kansas, South Central Kansas, near the Wichita area, the Rose Hill Vet Clinic. I mean, it's just, every time I even walk in there, it's just fun. I just love you guys. Aww. And we have fun together. We go riding, and hopefully we can do that sometime soon. And Brian and Jess do some rodeo work around here, and there's a lot of things to talk about. And we're going to be doing this about once every other month, okay? Yep.
Perfect.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
I say we do vaccines next time or food, one or the other. We'll concentrate on that. And for those of you out there who want to pay attention to that, then I think it'll be sometime in March we'll have that show. Perfect. So thank you all for joining us tonight. And how do people find you?
You can go to our website to get quite a bit of information, which is www.rosehillvetclinic.com. You can call us. Our phone number is 316-776-0040. And we'd be happy to meet you and your pets. We also have our Facebook page. Just basically look up Roseville Veterinary Clinic.
Thank you so much. And 2 weeks from today, I'll be having Heather Alice Shea back on the show, and she'll be talking about her higher self classes. So thank you all for joining us on New Earth Journey Radio this evening, and all shall be well.